You're listening to Quillcast, a podcast series brought to you by Quill Inquire in partnership with The Walrus, Open Book, and Toronto Life. I'm Stuart Woods, editor of Quill Inquire. In this episode, we speak to Andrew Westall, whose latest book, The Chimps of Fauna Sanctuary, was chosen as a Quill Inquire Book of the Year. Andrew Westall is a journalist and former primatologist. In The Chimps of Fauna Sanctuary, published by HarperCollins Canada, he writes about a group of chimpanzees living out their last days in a Quebec animal sanctuary after enduring years as the subjects of medical tests. He sat down with Quill Inquire's web editor, Sue Carter Flynn, in the first of a two-part series of interviews with nonfiction authors.
Welcome, Andrew, and thank you for being here today with us for Quillcast.
It's my pleasure.
So many of us grew up with images of chimpanzee and in film or, you know, grinning at us from greeting cards. How do you feel those images have desensitized us to the plight of these animals?
Well, in lots of ways. I mean, just recently there was a study that came out that showed that people who see chimpanzees in movies, in films, on greeting cards, in magazines, actually believe them to be less endangered in the wild than they actually are. It actually leads to sort of a desensitization towards their actual condition in the wild, which is really interesting, but also really informative about sort of the trouble with using animals in photography and in film. The other trouble with this stuff is that the animals we see are cute and cuddly, and we think that's what a chimpanzee is, when the fact is those are babies. Those are barely juveniles. And the fact is, when they get up to about 8 or 9 years old, they're often too strong, too rambunctious, becoming too wild to be used in film and in photography. So often they're either taken to a roadside zoo and sold there. And in the worst cases, these chimps end up in biomedical laboratories where, you know, they're welcomed with opened arms. So it's tough. I don't want to be a killjoy, but you always got to think about, you know, what's the life of these animals like after that photograph or after that movie is shot.
How did you prepare yourself for the experience of living in the sanctuary for 10 weeks?
You know, I didn't. And I don't usually. My favorite work to do is this sort of immersion, or you could say embedding myself with the subject. And I find that if I do a whole bunch of reading beforehand or talking to a whole bunch of people beforehand, I feel like I'm kind of distanced from all the details that I'm seeing. And I wanted my first experience with the sanctuary to be in person, in the flesh, in its physical form. And so I was much more sensitive to all the amazing little details that would help bring a reader in. So, and again, with the chimpanzees, I mean, obviously I knew a little bit about primates. I'm an ex primatologist in training, at least.
What were you surprised by when you did arrive?
The first thing that amazed me was their individuality. And you know, we all know this. We know that chimps are so sensitive, emotional. They have personalities. They have moods. They have friends and enemies, and likes and dislikes. But I could not believe how quickly I was able to tell them apart. I could tell it got to the point that when a whole bunch of the chimps were vocalizing or screaming or whatever, I could tell their voices apart. And if I ever saw a chimp sort of with his or her back towards me, I could tell through their body posture, through the way they were reacting with the other chimpanzees with them, who it was. So I could tell, oh, that's Yoko, or, you know, that's Petra. So their personalities and their individuality were what struck me the most.
Essentially, what you ended up writing was the biographies of 13 chimps. And I'm wondering, was that what you started out to do, or is that what's the result of what you just described?
Yeah, you know, I didn't start out thinking this is going to be a biography. I more thought this is going to be the story of this sanctuary. Once I got there, and again, I realized just how individual they were, but also I started learning all these chimpanzees' backstories. And I realized that the vast majority of the drama in this book was going to be in their lives before they got to the sanctuary. And I mean, I always knew there were going to be characters in the book. Of course, I knew that. But the extent to which their stories overwhelmed me while I was there is sort of why this thing became the story of their lives.
I'm sure that also must have built up pressure in terms of getting their stories right, especially when your subjects, they can't speak for themselves.
Yeah, I mean, we could talk, that could be a whole nother podcast, giving voice to a different species for sure. The trouble is that I'm seeing things and trying to put a story onto them. But with all the stories I'm recounting, or most of them, I talked to absolutely everyone who witnessed them. So I sort of talked my way and interviewed my way around each story. So the most incredible thing that I found out was that that Tom, the chimpanzee, is actually a doctor, that he actually knows how to heal his own wounds. He will put ointment on his own foot when it gets wounded. But also, even more incredibly, he can do this for other chimpanzees. And he doesn't do this very often, but he has done it in the past. Now, when I found that out, when I heard that he was cleaning Regis's head wound, I was like, there's no way. But you know what? I talked to everyone who saw it happen, and I believe them. And that made it into the book.
Tom, he really seems to be at the heart of the story. Like, maybe talk a little bit more about him.
Yeah, I mean, Tom is easily... When I was there, he was the most famous chimpanzee in North America that no one had heard of. He is the face of the movement to get chimps out of research in the States. And his stories have been told in front of the U.S. Congress a number of times, and they're often the one that Gloria leads with. He was one of the only chimps at Fauna who was actually born in the wild. His charisma and his personality are so strong that he became the grandfather figure to all the other chimpanzees. He became their mediator, and he also became Gloria's greatest teacher. So, and there's also quite a famous relationship between Tom and this human named Pat. And it sort of became mythologized to those of us who know Tom, that he's capable of this kind of connection with humans. And so I kind of went there, in a way, kind of seeking that kind of connection, which I think is pretty natural for us to do.
You know, you're talking about human-animal connection, and there's a romanticism, I think, that we kind of fall victim to about making that connection, you know, like the first time you make eye contact with an animal.
Right.
And I'm curious about how you managed to keep yourself out of the story so much.
I had myself in this book a lot more early on when I was first working on the first few chapters. But I realized pretty early on, once I realized the extent of the stories that were at my disposal and the incredible resilience and recovery I was witnessing, that this story is not about me. And I had sort of this big ego check. And I feel like my experience at Fauna was a big ego check. It was sort of putting me in, getting myself out of the story, learning as a writer to do that and to realize that the real story is sitting right in front of you, not inside your own head. So now I'm in the story, but I feel like I'm in there quite in just a small, quiet way, just as sort of a touchstone for the reader.
After your experience in writing this book, do you call yourself an activist? Is that considered taboo to a nonfiction writer?
Yeah, I mean, I don't call myself an activist, but I also rarely call myself a journalist. the journalist is the one that presents both sides and doesn't weigh in. There's no way I could explore this topic and not weigh in with my own opinion, and that's what I've done. I remember being on a panel with Weisin Choi in Australia a couple of years ago, and this same question came up, and he just said, you know, writing a book is the most active thing you can do. And it's kind of a silly thought because we sit in a room all day for years. But I see what he means. And the ability to delve really deeply into a subject for years and years is a form of activism. You get down to some of the roots that a lot of people don't have time or have the wherewithal to get to. So in that way, yeah, I'm an activist. But man, I'm just so lazy to be able to... I'm not the guy out there on a soapbox. I don't go out to, you know, all these different events. And I wish I did, but it's not really in me. I'm much more... someone who will sit and with an idea or something that I want to advocate for.
Now, you have an MFA in creative writing.
Right.
Does fiction writing interest you at all?
Funny you should ask. My MFA thesis was a novel.
Oh, okay.
I spent 3 years living in Vancouver writing a novel and really just assumed I was going to be a novelist, kind of assumed that since I was in high school when I discovered writing and how much I enjoyed it. But, you know, then I discovered creative nonfiction and realized, wow, I can have the adventures I've always wanted to have and then also, you know, write about them as well. I always say to people, you know, I'll get back, I will explore fictional worlds once I've done a little bit more living and I have a bit more to draw on, because honestly, there cannot be a worse novel out there right now than the one that's sitting in my drawer,
no.
just collecting dust.
Well, I mean, maybe that novel wouldn't have received Jane Goodall's endorsement. No.
Right. So, right. Yeah.
So you recently had an opportunity to actually meet her.
Yeah. I thought the highlight of my career was the day we found out Jane Goodall had read the book and she wanted to blurb it. It turns out the highlight of my career was last week in Vancouver at the Writers' Festival, because I received an email one morning from the Institute, Jane Goodall Institute of Canada, saying, you know, Jane's in Vancouver right now. Would you like to see her? And I just thought that meant, you know, I'll get a ticket to one of her events. Well, it turned out she wasn't doing any public events. And I was invited to go up to her hotel room and hang out.
Wow.
And
amazing.
So I went to the Delta Vancouver Suites and I called up. You know, it was the silliest moment. I grabbed the house phone and I called up to Jane Goodall's room, which is like, you know, could easily have just been a dream I had when I was like 18. So yeah, I went up there and I spent 45 minutes sitting next to Dame Jane Goodall, Dame of the British Empire, Jane Goodall. And it was pretty surreal. And we just talked about chimps and we talked about what needs to be done and how tough it is to raise money and all these sorts of different things.
That is incredible. And I'd like to thank you for being with us today, but I would also like to have you read something from the Jane Goodall endorsed The Chimps of Fauna Sanctuary.
Sure.
Do you want to explain what we're about to hear?
Yeah, I figured the best thing to do would be to just read the first moment I walked into the chimp house. The first thing I notice upon walking into the fauna chimp house is not, as I'd expected, the smell. A brooding stench of compost, urine, flatulence, and feces that apparently makes some visitors vomit. And it's not the sweltering humidity, an absurdity considering our northern locale. No, the first thing I notice is the fear, which runs up my spine like a silverfish as Gloria leads me down a dark hallway. It's a familiar feeling, reminding me how I felt the first few times I walked alone in the jungles of Suriname with only a machete to protect myself from the menagerie of rainforest predators. But this is not Suriname, and despite the smell and the heat, it's not a place where a bushmaster or a jaguar might roam. So I begin to wonder, is this my fear, or is it perhaps someone else's? As we walk, an eerie sound rises, like something large and hollow being dragged across the floor. Gloria turns to face me. "Rules," she says. "First, take your jacket off. The bigger you look, the more threatening you are. Second, you're tall. I need you to crouch. Third, do not stand too close to me. They don't interpret it properly. They can't control it. It's threatening. Four, respect the red lines on the floor. They're there for a reason." "What's that sound?" "The welcoming committee," Gloria smiles. "They already know you're here."
That's wonderful. Well, thank you very much, Andrew Westall, author of The Chimps of Fauna Sanctuary.
My pleasure.
Quillcast is supported by the Ontario Media Development Corporation in partnership with The Walrus, Open Book, and Toronto Life. Special thanks to the Boxcar Boys for providing Quillcast's theme music. For future episodes, visit quillenquire.com and click on the podcast link.